The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walser, a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Coming up, I'm going to offer an important reason why Trump should be the GOP nominee in 2024. And oddly enough, the reason is not directly related to Trump himself. I'll examine the ongoing skirmish between the Trump lawyers and the Biden DOJ over the Mar-a-Lago documents. I want to explore the strangeness of Lindsey Graham, and also Arizona GOP Attorney General candidate Abe Hamadeh will join me. We're going to talk about what he's going to do to make Arizona great again. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
I want to talk today about the left strategy in dealing with Republicans, a strategy that is focused on Trump. But I would argue in the end, it's not just about Trump. And to some degree, it's not about Trump at all. So here is an article in the New York Times just from a day or so ago. It talks about six separate investigations into Trump. And let's look at what those are. There is the New York State investigation. And this is the New York Attorney General Letitia James, who would campaign. I'm going to investigate Trump. I'll find something on him. So there's that investigation going on. There's the Manhattan DA's office investigation. That's not going too far, but that's the investigation that focuses on the Trump organization. That's led by the Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg. That's number two. Number three, there is the there's the congressional investigation. Of course, the forefront of this is the January 6th committee. So that's investigation number three, the congressional investigation more broadly, and then the January 6th committee, which is number four, I guess. And then we have the newest investigations, including the investigation about the Mar-a-Lago classified documents. So here we've got the kind of multiplicity of investigations, and all of it seems like overkill. But the reason it's not overkill is that with none of these does the left really have the goods. They're fishing, yes. But what are they trying to accomplish with all this? The criminalization, if you will, of political differences. Well, what they're trying to accomplish is they're trying to create veto power over Trump. They're trying to say to Republicans, basically, listen, we, the Democrats, get to say, we don't get to say who your nominee is in 2024, but we do get to say who it's not. It's not going to be Trump. We're going to make sure of it. Now, I unmask this strategy because there are Republicans, and I see this now on social media, is who go, well, you know, I think Trump is just a little bit too radioactive. I think there's too much going on. It's even if he wins, he's going to find that he's kind of tied up. Plus, they've done a lot to kind of tarnish his reputation. And so we need to go for somebody else. And the leading candidate, of course, is DeSantis. In fact, by the way, here, a USA Today poll, this is a poll of Republicans in Florida, shows that DeSantis narrowly edges out Trump in Florida. I've never seen any other poll in which DeSantis is leading Trump, and he certainly wouldn't be leading Trump nationwide. But interestingly, DeSantis is doing really well in Florida. And by the way, I don't want to take anything away from DeSantis. In fact, I'm amazed that almost every day he comes up with something new to flummox the left, to advance our side. I mean, this is a real model for what Republican officials around the country need to be doing, because a lot of them are just kind of asleep. I mean, think of some guy like John Cornyn in Texas. What does this guy actually do all day? It's really hard to say. And Cornyn is more the norm. So what we need are aggressive Republicans at the state level and also at the national level who every day are hatching new schemes. And okay, you're not in power. All right. Spend your time devising a program so that when you are in power, every single day you're going to be doing something new to push the ball forward and push back on the other side. Otherwise, Republicans come in and it's like, gee, we're really happy to have won the midterms. Now we get to sit around doing nothing for the next 2 years. This is by and large what I'm afraid of. So DeSantis in that degree has been proving himself. But the moment DeSantis does something, and in this case I'm thinking here about dispatching immigrants, as, by the way, Greg Abbott has been doing, to Martha's Vineyard. I'm now going to read from, this is actually an article, here it is, I see it on Newsbreak. Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott pull from the segregationist playbook with their anti-immigration stunts. And here's kind of what I'm getting at. The moment that we conservatives, we Republicans, acquiesce in the left strategy and go, okay, you know, Democrats, you've done enough damage to Trump. We won't pick Trump. We'll pick some other guy. The left will be like, wow, this is fantastic. We now have an effective veto power for the foreseeable future. Now all we do is turn around and do the same thing to DeSantis. So if there's any candidate from that the Republicans put up that is really threatening to us, we just hunker down, mobilize all our forces, the deep state, the universities, the entertainment world, the media. We open up local and federal investigations. Even if we don't really get anything, we throw enough dirt against the wall that we can convince these lackluster Republicans around the country to go, well, I guess this guy is out of commission. Now it's time to go to Pompeo. Well, perhaps we should now pick Nikki Haley. There haven't been any investigations into her. My point is, this is a loser's game. So let's not be losers. Let's recognize what the left is up to. My argument for Trump 2024 is precisely because the left is trying to veto him, we've got to make sure that that veto project does not succeed. And so my thinking at this point, and it's early in the game, and this is provisional thinking, is Trump DeSantis 2024. Seems to me this will be a formidable ticket, puts DeSantis exactly where he needs to be, right in line to come up next. And it's a lesson to a lot of other guys who should be in DeSantis's place, but haven't done what DeSantis has to earn that position on the, as number two on the ticket. Let's give the FBI a big thumbs down for seizing Mike Lindell's phone. They're trying to intimidate him, but Mike's not backing down. We need to support Mike, and the best way is to buy his great products. Now, let me talk about the MyPillow towels. They're so much better than the ordinary towels, which don't dry you. I mean, they feel soft and lotiony in the store, but you take them home and they don't absorb. Why? Because ordinary towel companies import the product, add softeners to make the towels feel good, but they don't dry you very well. Now, Mike Lindell has solved this problem. He's got the best towel company right here in the USA. They have proprietary technology to create towels that feel soft and actually work. They're made with USA cotton. They come with a MyPillow 60-day money-back guarantee. We only use MyPillow towels in our home. For a limited time, Mike is offering a ridiculously good deal on a 6-piece towel set. That's 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, 2 washcloths, all made with USA cotton. Regularly $89.98, but now $44.98. A great deal. Call 800-876-0227. That's 800-876-0227. Or go to MyPillow.com to get the discounts you need to use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. The case of the Mar-a-Lago documents is now in the hands of the special master. The special master is the independent judge. This is a guy named Raymond Deary, who has been chosen by Judge Eileen Cannon to look over these documents and kind of separate them out. Separate them out into documents that are personal versus documents that are official. Now, also separate them out into documents that are unclassified, documents that have been declassified, and on the other hand, documents that are still classified. And many people think that somehow this master, this Raymond Deary guy, gets the ultimate say over what happens next. But he actually doesn't. If you read the judge's order, in fact, I've been looking at social media, and they go, oh, you know, Trump made a huge mistake with this Deary guy. He's a real judge, unlike Eileen Cannon. He's really telling the Trump people what's what. Now, what are they referring to? They're referring to the fact that this judge, Deary, basically asked the Trump guys, which of the documents do you claim are classified or declassified? Are you claiming that you've declassified some of these documents? And the Trump lawyers were not prepared to say just yet, because we don't know what are all the documents that are in the FBI or the Biden DOJ's possession. So basically, the Trump people are making kind of a reasonable point, which is essentially give us a list of the documents when we look at the contents of the documents, because it's not like the Trump people at the time were there to like make copies of every document so they have the same base of information. They're flying to some degree in the dark. And so they don't want to assert generic claims without knowing which document. And so this is going to have to be sorted out. But the very fact that apparently Deary made the comment at one point to the Trump people, well, listen, you need to say what you what's classified and what isn't according to you. He says he made the statement, you can't have your cake and eat it too. And I think while a lot of people have used that to declare that Deary is somehow siding with the Biden DOJ, seems to me that's a very premature assessment. But nevertheless, what I'm getting at is that all that Deary is doing here is he's performing a task assigned to him by Judge Cannon. He makes recommendations about what's what, and those recommendations go right back to Judge Cannon. So who decides? Judge Cannon decides. And I don't think the left knows this. They think that somehow it's been transferred over to Deary. No, Deary is basically acting as an instrument of Judge Cannon. He's sort of assisting her in sorting out these kind of, let's call them the four piles of documents. Now, it's important to realize that just the very appointment of a special master is a big win for Trump on more than one count. Because it's a win for Trump because the Biden Justice Department was desperate to conceal these classified documents. By the way, classified documents that they claim are classified. And their point was nobody gets to see these documents, not even the special master. And basically Judge Cannon said, no, I reject your request. And besides, I don't trust you to be the final authority in determining whether something is classified or not. In fact, she flatly rejected the Biden DOJ's claim that somehow all documents that are not personal to Trump automatically belong to the U.S. government. It's almost as if when you're president, you have some personal papers, kind of like your own tax returns and things like that. Everything else belongs to the U.S. government. Now, no, this has not been the case. Presidents, by and large, have a lot of discretion over what documents they want to keep, what documents they want to turn over to the archives. I'm sure when we go to, when we look at the Clintons or we look at Obama, we will find that they took all kinds of documents from the government that were during their presidential tenure, refer to their presidency, that involve them and that they have every right to. I'm not talking here about classified documents. I'm just talking about documents in general. The issue of classification is now going to be a little critical. Apparently, there were some files that said classified at Mar-a-Lago that were completely empty. Now, the Biden DOJ is acting like, this is highly suspicious. We need to conduct an investigation of what was in those files, blah, blah, blah. So they're doing a massive song and dance routine. The basic purpose is to act as if, you know, our national security is gravely imperiled. Foreign spies are all over this. As I mentioned before, these are documents that were basically locked in a storage room in a facility, Mar-a-Lago, guarded by the Secret Service. So this all strikes me as a massive pantomime. It's a theatrical performance to see if Judge Cannon would fall for it. And happily, even though, by the way, she's a relatively inexperienced judge, what, 40 years old? She's been on the bench in a current position, I believe, 7 years. But she was very cool and calculated and basically go, listen, you know, basically, you're not this fog machine that you're putting out is not blinding me. I actually see what's going on. I'm not deciding against you, but I'm not deciding for you either. I'm going to get the advice of a special master. And so even though people say, oh, the judge is inexperienced, the judge is a fool, and so on, the judge is actually proceeding in a cautious but also forceful way to try to get this matter rectified and not to succumb to what seemed to be the deceptive tactics of the Biden DOJ. Hey, what some of us would do to just be young again. Simple things like climbing stairs, getting in and out of bed, taking a walk. Well, they aren't all that simple sometimes, but they can be, because thankfully now there's a 100% drug-free solution. It's called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of ordinary aches and pains. The majority of people who try Relief Factor love it. They order more because it works for them. Debbie can finally do the exercises she loves, like planks, push-ups, a stationary bike, and it's all thanks to Relief Factor. It's been a real game changer for Debbie and for many other people. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more. That number again, 833-690-7246. So go to relieffactor.com. You'll feel the difference. Almost out of nowhere, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina has introduced a bill, a proposed federal law at the national level that would outlaw abortion after 15 weeks. Now, Lindsey Graham appears to be kind of moving on two fronts. He seems to be saying, well, we have the momentum with us. Supreme Court has overruled Roe. Things are moving in our direction. Yes, the Supreme Court has sent the abortion decision back to the states, but why don't I up the ante by proposing a federal law? I mean, let's remember, the federal law would apply nationwide. And Lindsey Graham did make a very interesting observation in introducing the bill. He said that he's discovered that it is now routine for doctors who perform abortions to offer pain-killing drugs to the fetus. And so Lindsey Graham, in a very cunning way, goes, wait a minute, you're offering pain-killing drugs. Doesn't that actually mean that at 15 weeks, the unborn child feels pain? Why else would you administer pain-killing drugs? So what he is getting at is new research that's, by the way, for many, many years, even decades, the left would say, like, oh, it's ridiculous. The unborn have no sense of real developed consciousness. They can't feel anything. This idea that they feel pain is... I remember going back to Reagan. Reagan at one point... Do you remember this, honey? Reagan at one point suggested the fetus feels pain, and there was a kind of roar of derision and horror and ridicule at the time. Well, evidently, again, from the actions of the abortionists, you see that it seems to be true. But the point I want to make is it seems to me this is a very bad political strategy by Lindsey Graham. Again, I don't dissent at all on the substance. I don't dissent from the idea that we want to be consistent about abortion. Either the unborn are human beings with rights, yes or no. If they are, then it doesn't really make sense to say, well, all right, let each state make up their mind as to whether they want to provide these humans with rights. But nevertheless, we have just on the heels of this massive Supreme Court decision. Let's remember, Roe versus Wade has been the law of the land. In fact, supposedly enshrined in the Constitution. Can't find it anywhere, but nevertheless, a series of courts kind of found it there through a kind of close, weird type of reading of the Constitution. So this was intact for almost half a century, 40 years, really. And then the Supreme Court very boldly, very brilliantly, and with almost flawless reasoning, this is, I believe, Judge Alito, says, we're going to let this decision be made by each state reflecting the sentiments of the people in that state. Now, there's a certain kind of prudential logic to this, and that is that on a contentious issue, you basically decide, look, there are going to be progressive states where the overwhelming sentiment is pro-abortion. Fine. They're going to have laws that look a lot like Roe versus Wade. Abortion in on demand, virtually without a reason given for many months, if not all 9 months of the pregnancy. And then you're going to have very conservative states that are going to have virtually no abortions, maybe none at all, that are allowed, or they're going to be prohibited across the board with narrow exceptions, perhaps for rape, incest, and life of the mother. And then you're going to have moderate states in the middle that are going to have laws that reflect the sentiments of their citizens. Namely, we're going to restrict abortion in many cases, although permitted perhaps for the first trimester or permitted for a certain period of time. And this allows the issue to sort of settle down. So just when the court does this, you may say, the centrifugal force of dispersing the issue to the states, here comes Lindsey Graham and goes, let's pull it right back to the federal government. Let the federal government decide in our favor. But my point is, what is the practicality of this, Lindsey Graham? I mean, what is the chance that you can get this? Let's start with bills begin typically in the House. Can you get it through the House? No. You've got a Democratic majority. It's not going to get through the House. Are you going to get it through the Senate? No. And you know it as well as I do. Even if by some miracle you got it through the House and the Senate, what's the chance that Biden is going to sign it as opposed to vetoing it? And if he vetoes it, what's the chance that you can get a veto-proof majority in the Congress to override the veto? And the answer is you have no chance at all. So it seems to me Lindsey Graham, who's not stupid enough to think that he can somehow make this into a law, is doing it really for his own crass political benefit. He's basically trying to say, look, I'm not a rhino. I know there are a lot of people who don't like me for things I've said, so I'm going to come out strong on an issue that's really important to the base. I'm going to be the sort of pro-lifer that even upends the Supreme Court. I'm going to be more, you know, more pro-life than Alito, if you will. And but I recognize that it's just a symbolism. It benefits me politically because it seems like I'm the sort of pro-lifer to end all pro-lifers. And of course, some of the pro-life groups, of course, consistent with their own positions, have lined up behind Lindsey Graham, no surprise. But it seems to me not only is the tactic very foolish, but the timing is very inappropriate. Look, here's an article. This is CNN. Graham's 15-week abortion ban complicates Republican midterm messaging. Here is 538, the website. Lindsey Graham's abortion ban is dividing GOP Senate candidates in swing states. Why? Why are we doing this? We're going into the midterms. Why do we want Senate candidates for the GOP in swing states? Some of them decide with Lindsey Graham, some of them against. The left gets an issue that they can use. They're trying to motivate their base on the abortion issue. So this is just sheer foolishness from Lindsey Graham. But I think it's more than foolishness. There's an element here of crass opportunism that I find very distasteful. Are you watching your retirement slip through your hands every day? Are you worried about a black swan market event that could be coming? This is an event that comes out of nowhere and basically decimates your accumulated savings. That's not all. Interest rates going up, inflation skyrocketing. How can we protect our money? How can you get ahead of what's happening with the economy? This is not a time to wing it or go with a hunch. You need a qualified expert on your side. Well, I'm not that expert, but my friend Rebecca Walser is. She's a tax attorney and wealth strategist with her MBA from the London School of Economics. Rebecca and her team will help to prepare you and your money for the turbulent times ahead. We all work hard for our money. We can use some really good guidance to help us build on what we have. Go to friendofdinesh.com, book your complimentary introductory call today to see if you qualify. That's friendofdinesh.com. Let Rebecca Walser's team of experts protect your wealth during these unprecedented times. I want to talk about a very interesting video that is made by an Atlanta-based attorney. His name is Preston Moore. Now, this is a guy who does legal analysis, and he's very popular on Instagram. He's apparently popular on TikTok. It's kind of funny, honey. I thought TikTok was for, like, people who are, like, under 18, and here's this middle-aged attorney, Preston Moore. Maybe we should look at TikTok. Anyway, the point is this guy does videos.
Really popular.
Supposed to be really popular. Maybe it'll increase my following with, like, the Korean under 18 crowd. Oh man, that guy Dinesh is really very interesting. People all over the world, you know, it'd be really funny. Maybe I'll develop an Indian TikTok following. This Dinesh is making some very good points. My accent is not working.
No.
I'm failing miserably.
No, yes.
That's probably because being Indian, it's hard for me to do my
Indian accent.
Even though I had an Indian accent when I came to America.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to our topic at hand. This guy, Preston Moore, apparently gets an email from a left-wing group called the Good Information Foundation. Now, the Good Information Foundation is funded by Soros. It's funded by sort of left-wing money. And they're supposedly fighting disinformation, as we're about to see. They're actually promoting misinformation and disinformation. And so they tell this guy that this is apparently something they sent out to a bunch of people. They tell Preston Moore they'll pay him $400 if he makes a video blasting Trump before the November midterms. Yeah. I said funded by Soros. It's for Soros and Reid Hoffman, another left-wing money guy. So this guy, Preston Moore, says in his video, he goes, listen, I want to tell you what they were trying to get me to do. He goes, I want to start up the video by saying I'm not a Donald Trump supporter, so I want you to know where I'm coming from. And he says that the video, the message that he got from this foundation was very specific. And I want to just read a couple things. First of all, you have to use the words criminal conspiracy in connection with January 6th. Number two, you have to say Trump Republicans, not Trump and his allies, not Trump and his supporters. He says you have to say this is a, quote, attack on our country, on America. So in other words, not an attack on the Democrats, not legitimate concerns about the election. He says you've got to use the phrase MAGA Republicans. And he says, it also says, and the guy posts the notes that were sent to him, make clear this is ongoing and unresolved, not past and done. Just in case people go, well, it was regrettable. It was January 6, 2021. Oh, no, it's ongoing. And then it finally says, show voter agency, turn anger into defiance. In other words, get out the vote for Democrats. Now, the part that caught this guy's attention, we're talking about Atlanta-based attorney Preston Moore, is the phrase that says that what a lot of people don't know is that the violence on January 6th was actually planned and paid for by Trump Republicans. And in fact, it goes on to say the Trump campaign, quote, the Trump campaign literally paid millions of dollars to make January 6th happen.
Oh, my goodness.
So this guy, Preston Moore, is pretty smart. He sends an email back and he goes, what is your evidence for the fact that the Trump campaign paid millions of dollars to make January 6th happen? Now, very interestingly, the group, the Good Information Foundation, replies back and says, quote, says to him, you can leave that out of your video if you want to. So in other words, they don't have any support. They're obviously lying. They can't provide any support. But they're like, you don't have to say that. And he replies, he doesn't let it go. Preston Moore goes, he goes, yeah, but whether I put it in or not, what is the support for that claim? And then what comes back to him is basically, you know, we're willing to pay you. Do you want to do the video or not? So this is an operation of lies. It's apparently, according to Axios, former Obama White House Communications Director Dan Pfeiffer is a member of the advisory board. So is former Obama White House official Jason Goldman, former Obama official Rick Stengel. So, I mean, look, apparently this is Obamaites. I mean, if you think these are the kind of, almost think of them as the little demons. If you want to put Obama as the father of lies. I'm not saying Obama is Satan, Debbie's saying this is Obama's third term. Well, this is the way in which, under the guise of fighting misinformation, these people knowingly are perpetrating it. Fortunately for this guy, Preston Moore, I mean, he's an attorney. He does know that things need to be supported and proved. He also, right away, I think his antenna went up and he realized these are not good guys. These are guys who are trying to get me to lie for them. And they're doing it with the obvious goal of trying to influence the midterm. So he declined. He basically told them to take a hike. And even better, he decided to go public to make a video about his experience. By the way, I posted the video on my Twitter. If you want to hear him talk about it, go to my Twitter feed and check it out. The effort to pay off a lawyer $400 to make a video did not succeed. Have you noticed it's pretty colorful at the grocery store in the produce section, all the vibrant colors of fruits and veggies? Well, our friend Dr. Howard at Balance of Nature explains that all those colors, the reds, the yellows, the greens, you see represent nutritional variety. Now, I don't eat anywhere near the 10 daily servings of fruits and veggies I should, so Balance of Nature is the way I give my body what it needs to stay healthy. Debbie and I take these 6 little fruits and veggie capsules every day. Each daily dose is made up of a blend of 31 different fruits and veggies. 31. So variety equals vitality. Give your body everything it needs with Balance of Nature. Invest in your health. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for years to come. For a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code America. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code America. Hey guys, I'm delighted to welcome to the podcast Abe Hamadeh. Abe is the candidate, the GOP candidate for Arizona Attorney General. In fact, I remember now many months ago, I got a message from Rick Grenell saying, do you know this guy, Abe Hamadeh? You got to check out this guy, Abe Hamadeh. He's amazing. And that was really kind of my first exposure to Abe. He's an intelligence officer in the U.S. Army Reserve. In fact, he returned recently from a deployment to Saudi Arabia. He's also a former prosecutor of the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. He's prosecuted criminals, stood up for victims' rights. And he is not only a formidable, but the leading candidate right now for Attorney General in Arizona. Abe, welcome to the podcast. Great to have you. You come, as I say, highly recommended. Let me just start by kind of asking you about your story. Talk a little bit about your American dream and what caused you to want to jump into the fray here in electoral politics.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Dinesh. So, you know, I always start off with my story. You have to start with my parents. So my parents actually came from Syria 30 some odd years ago. You know, I was born in Chicago, unfortunately, but, you know, they, like every immigrant, you know, they came with no money, no education, you know, just worked hard for the American dream. And, you know, we ended up in Arizona quite randomly, actually, Dinesh, my father, he won the lottery. It was like $50,000. It wasn't life-changing, but it included a stay at the Scottsdale Princess Resort in January of the mid-90s. So as you can imagine, they got off the flight at Sky Harbor in Phoenix. And they said, wow, we found the Middle East of America. So it was quite easy for them to move out here. And, you know, my sister, she married an NBA player, NBA champion, who played at Arizona State University here. My brother, successful real estate investor. So, and here I am now the GOP nominee for Attorney General. But, you know, what got me involved in politics, you know, I've been around it for a while. You know, I was watching Lou Dobbs and, you know, I was worked on the Ron Paul campaign way back in 07. But, you know, honestly, when I was overseas on my Army tour last year, I was overseas for 14 months. But when I got back here in September of 2021, so exactly this time last year, you know, I don't say this to be hyperbolic, Dinesh, but I no longer recognize our country. I mean, just look at the COVID times, for instance. How quickly did we shut down churches, schools, or small businesses and allowed our loved ones to die alone at the hospital? You know, just something that I think our founding fathers would be ashamed of us right now. So, you know, this is my generation's fight. And, you know, I got in the fray. We had a tough primary battle, but, you know, the Republicans out here in the Arizonas, they recognize what we need right now is tough, bold leaders with a backbone who aren't going to back down. And, you know, so that's exactly what I'm going to focus on when I'm Attorney General.
I mean, you're making a very interesting point, Abe, and I completely resonate with it. And that is that for most of our lifetimes, people like you and me have just reflexively thought of America as a good country, the best country. We can trust our basic institutions. We go in and vote and we can trust that the process will deliver will deliver an honest result. We can trust the FBI to do things the right way. And now what has happened, and I think you're right, COVID was the sort of catalyst for it, is suddenly we realize that our basic liberties have suddenly been called into question. We can't take for granted that we can speak our minds in this country. I mean, Debbie and I treat this podcast as a precarious enterprise, and we need people who will fight to protect these basic rights, an American dream that, would you agree, is imperiled now, perhaps more than ever?
I mean, that's exactly right. I'm just not sure what the opportunities, you know, when you're going to colleges and universities, what they're teaching, you know, kids nowadays. I mean, you know, for me, when I was in college and law school, I don't remember gender pronouns being a thing, but how it came to become normalized in our society is so frightening. And this is what I say, Dinesh, where, you know, you're right. During the last 2 years, I think we recognized how powerful states are. And what we witnessed with Florida being open, but New York and California being closed, you know, I think people finally had a firsthand look on, you know, government matters and state government matters. And in my primary, for instance, it was about $6-7 million spent just in my primary alone with the other candidates. So, you know, these races are getting expensive because we've seen the weaponization of these offices all across the country. I mean, look at Letitia James up in New York. So this is what's very frightening. And what we have to realize is that in order to have prosperity, we need to have security. And every single city that Democrats control, these are the same cities that have humans defecating in the streets, needles in the streets, forcing hotels to have their vacant rooms house homeless people, rolling blackouts. So this is what's frightening. The Democratic policies has failed Americans. And this is why they're going to be stunned this November when America First Republicans win.
This is awesome, Abe. Great stuff. Let's take a pause. When we come back, I want to talk to you specifically about crime and about the border.
Absolutely.
Imagine the lifelong impact of a journey to the Holy Land. Surrounded by like-minded travelers, picture yourself stepping foot in iconic locations right out of Scripture. Join Dr. Sebastian Gorka and Dinesh D'Souza on this life-enriching Israel tour, November 30th through December 9th, 2022. For more information, call 855-565-5519 or visit standwithisraeltour.com.
I'm back with Abe Hamadeh, embodiment of the American dream, a former, intelligence officer in the U.S. Army Reserve, former prosecutor of the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, now the GOP, the Republican candidate for Arizona Attorney General. Abe, it seems to me that that you represent and others represent the kind of multiracial face of the GOP, even though the left works really hard to somehow portray the Republican Party as you know, a white party, a white supremacist party. Isn't it a reality that all over the place now we're seeing people from all different backgrounds all resonating with a message of upward mobility, law and order, and basic decency?
Yeah, you're right. You know, I chuckle because the Arizona Republic, one of these so-called newspapers out here, they actually called me saying that I was promoting white supremacist views. You know, this is what they think of us. But, you know, you're right about this new movement. The Republican Party really stands for opportunity. And this is why you're seeing record number of Hispanics coming out to vote for Republicans right now. And this is just shocking Democrats. But, you know, it makes sense because everybody wants safety on their streets. They want to have their children be able to walk, you know, to school and back home without fear of criminals getting after them. So, you know, what you're looking at right now is this idea of e pluribus unum, out of many one. I mean, that is our founding ethos and something that I love about, you know, the military. And I'm so proud of, you know, having served. It's we wear the American flag on our right shoulder sleeve. And it doesn't matter what race you are, what religion you are, how much your status is in life. We're all in it together and we're all equal under the law. But the Democrats are slowly or actually quickly eroding that concept. I mean, just think about the past few years. This is an acceleration that I've never seen before. So this is why it's so critical that we win this November.
Abe, you know, usually when I look for candidates I like around the country, I find one guy over here and one guy over there and someone else over here. What's cool about Arizona is that you guys seem to have created a kind of a phalanx, right? You got Blake Masters in the Senate race. You've got Carrie Lake in the gubernatorial race. You've got Fincham in Secretary of State. You've got you for Attorney General. I mean, if you guys do a sweep, it seems to me your Arizona is now will then be able to join Texas and Florida in leading the country at the state level. I mean, sometimes it seems to me that the national GOP is, if not asleep, half asleep. But there's a lot of innovative and bold stuff going on at the state level. And you're trying to do that in Arizona, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. We have a great slate of candidates right now. And, you know, I credit President Trump. All of us were Trump endorsed candidates. But, you know, Carrie Lake and myself, we had a press conference last week. I don't know if you had a chance to see, but we received the endorsement of the police organizations out here. And the media was trying to come after us and trying to say, oh, law enforcement, you know, arbors racist views. And I mean, Carrie Lake and I lit into them. And, you know, the media at the end of it had their tails between their legs because, you know, we push back against the narrative. We push back. We're not scared of the media. And that's what's so exciting. I think you're right. Arizona is going to be the leading example all across the country once we take off this next January.
Abe, talk about two critical issues which seem to me to be connected with each other. On the one hand, you've got the illegal immigration issue and the fact that Biden has shown this kind of flagrant disregard of the border. On the other hand, you've got the crime issue, but they're not two distinct issues, are they? Because the illegal issue contributes to the crime problem.
You're exactly right. And, you know, when I was just down at the border in Yuma last week, you know, these people are coming across the country. It's not like they're evading law enforcement. I mean, they're literally waiting for a bus to pick them up, and they know the process. They're not these poor illegal immigrants either. I mean, they have $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 that they pay to the drug cartels to get them smuggled in. And I witnessed every single ethnicity represented down at the border. I mean, you had Indians, you had Russians, you had Chinese, you had Guatemalans. So, you know, it's absolutely frightening. And those ones, you know, that's a distraction for the cartels operations who are also bringing the fentanyl and evading law enforcement with camouflage. So that's what's frightening. And that's why I've been calling upon on day one when I take office, I'm going to work with Governor Carrie Lake in the state legislature, but we're going to classify the drug cartels as terrorist organizations. And with that designation, we'll have enhanced sentencings on them because under current Arizona law, we use the U.S. Department of State's definition of a terrorist. And, you know, that's been politicized. I mean, the Yemen Houthi rebels who were firing missiles at me when I was in Saudi Arabia, you know, they were delisted as terrorist organizations by the Biden administration. So Arizona knows who the threat is. And these are the narco terrorists. But you're right about how this is affecting our communities and crime. I mean, look at fentanyl. You know, now they're targeting fentanyl with school children with these candy color, you know, fentanyl pills. So this is what's absolutely frightening. So once we secure the border, our streets will become secure as well. So that's why it's my number one issue.
Abe, it's really a pleasure to have you. I mean, you have been really strong. I was delighted to recommending 2,000 mules. You've been talking about the fact that across the board, you're going to be really tough. And I really wish you the best. By the way, your website, abe4ag.com, abe4ag.com. This is a way to find out more about Abe Hamadeh and to support him. Abe, thanks very much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Dinesh.
We are now beginning a section of the Odyssey, very famous section, the adventures of Odysseus and his men, kind of on the high seas. And this will continue for three books, four books, 9, 10, 11, and 12. And that takes us to the midpoint of the Odyssey. The Odyssey is 24 books, same as the Iliad. And so at the end of book 12, Odysseus will have completed his narrative, will be back to his hospitality with the Phaeacians, and they will essentially direct him home. And then all kinds of new troubles begin because, of course, there's a big problem going on in Ithaca. Now, Odysseus picks up the narrative to an enraptured and attentive group of Phaeacians. And he begins the narrative very briefly with the aftermath of the Trojan War. He talks basically about his men mopping up a couple of the cities that were allies of the Trojans. And there was some ferocious fighting. In fact, six well-armed members of his crew, he says, died from each of the ships. By the way, Odysseus has 12 ships. So he loses some men in those last battles. But then he is essentially, they're out at sea. The men are out at sea. And there is a fierce storm sent by Zeus. The ship is blown this way and that. Odysseus, in fact, says that he was making his way home. He was not very far away, but he got blown completely off course. For 9 days, the winds pulled him in various directions. And on the 10th day, he lands at the first place that he is now going to have to deal with. And it turns out to be a very strange place. It is a place that is that is inhabited by a group of people weirdly called the Lotus Eaters. The Lotus Eaters. Now, the Lotus Eaters are not threatening or dangerous in any direct way. They're not like, in fact, many of the other people, the giants, the cyclopses, and in fact, the experience Odysseus has in going into the underworld. All of that is coming later. But the Lotus Eaters basically have a plant. It's the lotus plant and the lotus fruit. And they all eat the lotus fruit. They basically sort of sit around in a kind of dazed and pleasant stupor, almost like they're, quote, on drugs. And they have no desire to move. In fact, their only desire is to kind of sit there and enjoy the sweet kind of forgetful taste of the lotus plant and the lotus fruit. They forget, actually, their past. And so Odysseus's men start eating the lotus fruit, and they're like, we love it. It's great. We want to stay here. We don't remember anything. We don't want to go anywhere. And Odysseus says, quote, I dragged them back in tears, forced them on board the hollow ships, pushed them below the decks, and tied them up. I told the other men, the loyal ones, to get back in the ship so no one else would taste the lotus. So what you have here is a temptation. A temptation from the lotus eaters to forget about what they're all about. And what are they all about? Going home. Homecoming is the theme of the Odyssey. And so even though the lotus plant is not bad for them in a sense that it doesn't harm them in any way, nevertheless, it is a distraction. It is a temptation. By the way, to broaden our inquiry here, what's going on here is a pretty good definition of what in the Christian vocabulary we would call sin. And what I mean by this is that we think of sin in terms of, you know, don't do this and don't do that, as if sin is defined by just the Ten Commandments. But there's a kind of a broader view of sin, which is that we are on a journey. We're pilgrims. We have a destination. And anything that pulls us away from that destination takes us down another road. Even if pleasant in itself, even if not harmful in itself, even if not in violation of any commandments in and of itself, nevertheless, it is taking us off the path that we should be on. And that's the way Homer presents it, that Odysseus, in fact, here recognizes that this is dangerous to our mission to get home. These men, if they continue to sit here, will basically become, well, let's call them addicts. They will become addicted to the lotus fruit. They will never get anywhere. In fact, they will never do or accomplish anything. Their life becomes inert and becomes one of abandoning all responsibility. And Odysseus is sort of like, I'm going to grab them, tie them up, force them. I'm going to get the men that haven't eaten the fruit to be kind of my troops in this. And so he puts these people back into the ship and off they go. And now the next destination, which I'm going to pick up tomorrow, is perhaps, well, arguably the most famous episode in the Odyssey. And that is the adventures of Odysseus and his men in the land of the Cyclopes. So we're going to talk about a particular Cyclops, a guy named Polyphemus. But the plural of Cyclops is Cyclopes. So it's the land of the Cyclopes, a kind of remarkable group of cannibals who are also shepherds. And Odysseus finds himself trapped and he's got to figure out how to get away.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.